everyone. We are back live here on MixLR.com/PWPonderings for a live review of Wrestle Kingdom 9. Of course, we hope everyone had a great New Year's and everyone is excited for it to be 2015. Of course, I am Chris Chesty, the web admin. I am joined by pretty much a superstar cast. We have Brian, Jerome Cuson, the senior editor, and TJ Hawk, all to review this really big show that just happened. And hopefully at this moment, all of you were able to see it. So, Jerome, how are you doing, sir?
I am doing very well. I was able to successfully watch the show spoiler-free. I slept like a normal human being and woke up and then watched the show on New Japan World and had a complete success. It was overall very impressive how I was able to just watch the show on my computer and avoid spoilers, and it was a very positive experience. It sounds like there were other. It's funny. We actually had problems with everyone else, but not with New Japan World. New Japan World apparently was the best way to watch the show.
It sounds like that. So of course we got to talk about that first, but we'll get to that in a second. TJ, how are you doing, sir?
Great. I did not sleep like a normal person because I woke up at 2 a.m. to watch the show, and then I stayed up to 6:30 in the morning to edit my review, which you can read at 401mania. And then I went to sleep for about 4 hours and then got started with my day. So I'm still pretty tired and ready to bury a few matches and ready to praise a few more of them.
Well, I'm going to be less supportive of you because we don't plug other website on this podcast. We don't do that. Bad form there. Brian, of course, you were live tweeting it live for everyone over at twitter.com/PWPonderings. How are you doing, sir? How are you awake?
Wow, my voice is very, very hoarse just from screaming so much last night. I had people over, you know, I had Des Del Badillo and Rudy over. Shout out to them. We were all, you know, watching New Japan till 3 in the morning, West Coast time. And I actually had two people over who had never seen New Japan in their life, and they fucking loved it. And they were blown away, and they're anxious to see more, actually. And they all love JR because it helped them, tell the stories and connect with them and, you know, help them connect with the stories of the matches and all that stuff. And but, you know, at the same time, Matt Stryker kind of got annoying at some time. Well, about 30% of the time, maybe. But it wasn't so bad. But He shouldn't have said marked out. That was bad.
It could have been worse. It really could have. But yes, there are several people in the chat room. We want to thank you all for joining us live. And guys, the thing we got to start out with is what the hell was going on with this Flips app? It basically was, there was the issue of people thought that they could stream it on, say, their Chromecast or their Xbox One. They weren't able to do that. But the bigger problem was it wasn't even playing for a lot of people, which is, I mean, I don't know. Guys, this is crazy. Jerome, you being the senior editor, what were your thoughts on this? This was just a disaster.
So the one good thing about this is that this really isn't New Japan's fault. So you can't really look at the company and hold them necessarily directly responsible. This is a Global Force Wrestling and a Jeff Jarrett issue more so. So you've really just got to look at them as being the men to blame for this. And, you know, I think it's very unfortunate that people who are not able to watch the show, you know, who paid for it. I mean, that sucks for everybody, especially when you're paying, you know, $35 for this broadcast. If you were unable to watch it, then that's awful, because not only did you miss out on a great wrestling show, but in some cases you were misled and misled, and that's never a good thing. But like I said earlier, I think the one positive thing is that I think from New Japan's perspective, I think everything sort of worked on their end. So I think all the fault goes to whomever is in charge of this app, and with the Global Force Wrestling and with the American cable companies as well, because we heard that there were some issues there as far as people not being able to order the show. Certain cable companies, including Dish Network, that only aired the show in standard definition, and some that decided to air the UFC replay instead of New Japan, when earlier they decided that they would air it.
And don't even get Brian and me started on that UFC show. Just don't go there. So,
yeah, it's fake anyway. Who cares?
Boring.
Exactly. So, Brian, you were watching it, and of course you were doing it live for PWP. Your overall thoughts on the show? Was this a success, given, or did you also have any issues?
Well, I had issues with flips. It didn't work, so I had to do New Japan World for a bit, and then actually my internet was a little shaky, so the stream wasn't actually that good for New Japan World, so I found an alternate means, and that's all I'm going to say, and it was in English, and it was actually better than the actual New Japan stream, so there you go. That's all I'm going to say. But, I mean, come hell or high water, I was going to watch this show in English, so, live. And, fuck, I already paid $35. I better get that refund, because there was a mass email that went out from Flip saying, we apologize with any new, you know, with any new technology, there's always going to be hiccups. And I just got this kind of, like, the Ring of Honor iPay-per-view vibe from, like, Go Fight Live. I got that kind of vibe, you know? And, yeah, I better get that refund because I complained and hopefully I'll get my refund. But overall, the show I think is going to be a success in terms of buzz. And it seemed like a lot of people on Twitter were like, I've never seen New Japan before. This is my first show and now I'm a big fan of it. I'm a fan of the product now. I think JR kind of helped with that, getting the exposure and kind of being the draw for the U.S. version. And overall, I think it's going to be a success overall. And we'll see how the numbers go. I think the fact that it wasn't live is going to hurt a little bit. Not maybe a lot, but maybe a small percentage, just because, a lot of people wanted to watch it live, you know, so I don't blame them. And you couldn't do it on in-demand, or for me it was in-demand because that's my my pay-per-view channel. So they decided to do the UFC thing, so I don't blame them.
You have Time Warner, right, down in SoCal? Is that?
Yeah, Time Warner. Yeah, so Time Warner sucks. But after 15 years of loyal service, they keep giving you discounts as long as they keep sucking, I guess.
TJ, what was your viewing experience? Did you have any problems? And then overall thoughts on the show before we get into the nitty-gritty.
Oh, I watched it on New Japan World. I pretty much had a perfect experience with that. And plus, I get to watch countless matches pretty much for the next month on top of the great show that we had. And yeah, as I said, overall, I'd say it was a great show. Definitely some matches that did not deliver whatsoever, in my opinion. But overall, I mean, you can't ask more than what you got for that show, especially when I paid about $8.50 for it.
Did you watch today's show? Is that already up?
I don't think it's happened yet. It's gonna.
Oh, okay.
I think it's
happened. Oh, right. Right.
Yeah, it's about 11 in the morning there. So.
Right. Okay. So let's get into this a little bit. Jerome, your overall thoughts on the show? Anything else outside of, you know, complete details of what you thought?
I think that when you look at this show, there was a lot of positivity that I heard from a number of people. I think when you look at this show, you know, I see two or three match of the year contenders easily, especially I think the last two matches for everyone really stood out, particularly the Intercontinental title match. I think Nakamura versus Ibushi is the match that people are going to walk away from the show talking about, because, you know, the match was not only, I would say, borderline perfect, but you could also see just Nakamura being the biggest star to come out of the show because of how charismatic he is, because of his personality. I mean, this guy, I think, if people who had never watched New Japan watch this for the first time, I think they're going to walk away thinking Nakamura is the biggest star just based off of his personality and the incredible match. So I think that is first and foremost. I think overall, I think the show was paced very well. I'm not usually a fan of four-hour wrestling shows. I think WrestleMania times can just feel like a chore to watch sometimes. This show really flew by. It really was well-paced for the most part. Everything got, I think, its proper amount of time. There really isn't a single match that I would say went too long or too short. Maybe the opener had some issues with pacing, but I don't think that was necessarily a case of the match getting too little or too much time. So great pacing to the show. I actually watched the Japanese version first, so I can't really speak. And then I watched some of the English commentary, so I can't speak in detail about, you know, Jim Ross and Matt Stryker. But it from what I did watch, it was a mixed bag at times. I think it's obvious that these two, you know, do not watch the product on a regular basis, but they definitely got better as they went along, and I think they really did add a special feel to the last two matches by the time that they were sort of, you know, adjusted into the product. So, yeah, overall, just a really outstanding wrestling show, and this is going to be tough to top as far as quality goes.
Right. I thought it was a really good show as well. And, you know, as you said, well-paced, lots of good matches. And, of course, I think we're gonna go with some of the main topics. I don't think, given that we have some time constraints, we're not going to really have time going match through match, every single one of them, unless we talk real quickly about it. But, guys, why don't we I don't know. Why don't we start off with the matches that we liked? Jerome, since you're the senior editor, you get to go first. What was... your top three, top four matches, whatever. I know a lot of these were really good, but if you really had to pin it down to some, which ones would you?
I think all of our answers are going to be the same. I think the Intercontinental title match is going to be first. I think the second match is going to be the main event, Okada and Tanahashi. I have a feeling that TJ probably isn't going to say this was number three based on the fact that I read his review, but I think for most everyone else, it's going to be the NEVER championship match between Ishii and Makabe. So, I mean, it's really easy for me to just pick out those three matches because, like I said, they're 2 to 3 match of the year contenders, and those are the three matches that I would have given 4 stars easily, if not higher. So, for me, it's an easy decision.
Brian, what did you think? Because I know you and I, we were talking a little bit off the air about some of these matches that other people were giving, like, just almost obligatory 5 stars to, and we were like, you know, maybe not so much. What are your top, I guess, 3 matches of the show?
I guess it would be a kind of a tie between the top 2 matches, the double main event, just because I actually felt like the first Ibushi Nakamura match was slightly better, just because.
Wow, really?
Huh?
I'm just shocked.
Because that Osaka crowd kind of added something to that first match, I felt. And I still kind of recall that moment in the first match where Ibushi's getting kicked in the corner and then he just stands up, you know. They kind of replayed that kind of moment here in the second match when he was getting kicked in the ropes and then he stood up and kind of stood up to Nakamura. And then just, I don't know about that German suplex spot, though, because that was really, it looked reckless, but, I mean, Nakamura, landed good enough that he didn't hurt himself, it looked like, but... I thought that was really questionable just because it didn't look clean. I mean, I know it's not supposed to look totally clean, but it just looked god-awful, like reckless. I don't know about you guys, but I thought that German suplex spot was kind of reckless.
In a great way.
I guess.
I think some people liked it, some people didn't. I totally get what you mean, though. When I saw it, I was like, oh, that's kind of it. But once you knew he was okay, I just kind of...
Yeah, I guess that was, you know. But overall, I think that match was just, you know, JR brought... the story of the match with Ibushi. I didn't realize he would actually tell good stories in some of the matches, but JR kind of pulled it off with this match because it really is the story of Ibushi becoming a heavyweight in this match, essentially, you know, just going from a junior heavyweight to a heavyweight, you know, giving all these analogies about no longer being a boy and becoming a man or something, some shit like that JR would say. But, you know, and then, you know, Tanahashi and Okada was, you know, fantastic. It wasn't as slow paced in the first 10 minutes as I thought, so... It actually kept a consistent pace throughout the match, and it kept you kind of intrigued. And just some of those crazy spots, my God, like Tanahashi going for the crossbody over the railing, just totally insane. Just because, I mean, the guy's got a hurt back, he's got a hurt neck,
and his knees, man.
He was hobbling around a few times. He looked old.
Yeah, did you guys? Yeah. I mean, his entrance. At first, I was like, maybe he's just coming down slow, you know, because he's doing his air guitar thing. But then, like. No, it's his knees, man. You can tell.
Did you see him doing air guitar up the ramp?
I thought he was.
That's, he looked like an old man when he did that.
Right. Yeah. I mean, and some of it we can think it's attributed to him selling, but it's like, no.
That was pretty early in the match. I think he's just old and the adrenaline hadn't kicked in yet.
Yeah, so I think that this match was kind of like his final... I guess, you know, classic before his, you know, he has to change his style. I think he has to obviously change his style because he's not going to hold up till 40.
He should be a hot tag and a tag team by now. I don't know what.
I think he should have been a tag team a year ago, but I think because of this, I feel like because when they got the American deal, maybe they kind of figured that they got to put Tanahashi as like the main guy just to get that appeal, and they got to do Tanahashi Okada as like, you know, the main draw, is like the main two for an American audience, because that's kind of your go-to in terms of your five-star main event. So maybe this was just kind of to get Tanahashi out there as like the main star, just to put him as the ace. And then over time, they're going to transition to Okada. But just a fantastic match, though, I thought, just because I love the fact that Okada kept trying to hit the Rainmaker, and Tanahashi kept countering and countering and countering. And then when Okada finally hit it, he just didn't have the energy to make the pin in the right amount of time. And then, again, just, you know, Tanahashi ducking the Rainmaker. I thought that was just some great moments there.
It was. And we'll definitely get into it. There were a lot of title changes on this show, so we'll talk more about that. But like I said, due to some time constraints, I just want to make sure we can get our favorite matches in there. So, TJ Hawk, what were some of your three? And you know what? Just have at it. Just go for it.
Oh, I mean, head and shoulders, the best match in the show, in my opinion, was Kota Ibushi versus Shinsuke Nakamura. I think that was a star-making performance by Kota Ibushi. He elevated his game to levels that I didn't know he was capable of in terms of overall character presentation, just how he moved in the ring. Like, it was, he looked like a main eventer. He looked like a future world heavyweight champion for New Japan, which is something I never would have guessed would have been possible. And now it seems like it's a big possibility within the next 2 years. And as I've written about, as great as he was, Nakamura was the better wrestler in the match. And with Nakamura, he can go like 2 or 3 months without a great match. He can go 6 months without a great match. He'll have lots of good matches, but he won't always have great matches. A lot of times just based on who he's wrestling. But then every once in a while, he'll just pull out a performance like this. You're just like, you are the greatest wrestler on this planet. And that was, to me, that. So when you combine those two things together, I mean, you get nearly a perfect match. I mean, and also in terms of that German suplex, one, that was probably not the most dangerous German suplex on the show. And also, I would take a springboard German suplex from Kota Ibushi rather than like a normal suplex from Yujiro. So I didn't really think that was particularly dangerous. I thought they executed it pretty well. But I mean, there were just so many great moments in this match. Just like when Kota is like early on trying to throw some big strikes, and the ref kind of gets in the way, and Nakamura is able to get a punch in, and just like the shit-eating grin Nakamura had on his face because he was able to get a closed fisted punch in, which just, I don't know, it was just like, there was moments like that where it just put this match over the top for me. And I wasn't surprised at the result, because New Japan kind of likes to do slow burns with elevating people, and I think Kota is someone, is kind of like what Tetsuya Naito was like 2 or 3 years ago, where they think, oh, this guy could be one of the next big players in the company. So maybe they're going to slowly build up Ibushi to where he can win the world title in, I would say, in 2 years, probably not in 1 year. But I thought that was just, if there's a match that beats that for 2015, we should count ourselves lucky. I thought that was just phenomenal. And I've already rewatched it, and still think it's phenomenal. Tanahashi versus Okada would be my number two match of the night, but it would probably be the weakest match I feel like I've seen these two have. I haven't gone back and watched their 2010 match before Okada became Okada, but I would think I thought this was weaker than anything they did in 2013 at the very least. And I just thought, you know, Brian, I kind of disagree with a couple of points made. I thought the first 10 minutes, really nothing of note was done. I didn't think they really, like, when I think back to their King of Pro Wrestling match in 2013, like, Tanahashi kind of healed it up early on. Okada was going after the neck. Tanahashi was going after the Rainmaker arm. So, like, they planted a lot of seeds for things to either to change up the dynamic or to plan stuff for that would be paid off later. And I really didn't think they did any of that this year. And, I mean, this match. And I found that to be a little disappointing. And it's actually, with the Rainmaker, this was actually the first time someone kicked out of the Rainmaker when Okada made the cover right away. Tanahashi's, I kicked out like once or twice when Okada hit it but couldn't make the cover for like 20 seconds, let's say. But I thought it did not really get a big reaction from the crowd, which I was kind of surprised by, because it was really like Okada hit it. Maybe like he took a beat and then he made the cover and he kicked out. And I really couldn't believe they wasted on Tanahashi. We even talked about it on the preview show that we hope they don't waste that on Tanahashi. And it seems like they did. And not only that, but Okada then lost the match, which is just something
it's just very New Japan. The last five January 4th shows have ended with Tanahashi holding a title belt because New Japan, I think, is just afraid to not end their biggest show of the year with their biggest audience in that manner. And I don't, you know, even, like, even WWE doesn't end WrestleMania every year with John Cena holding the title high. Even Hulk Hogan didn't win the title at WrestleMania 4. And obviously, like, Tanahashi is not quite as obnoxious as those two could have been at times, but I just, like, let's see someone new. Like, I mean, Okada's already choked and quote-unquote choked in this position in 2013. Why are you doing that again? And it's the same, and it was the same situation there where he won the G1, which is supposed to be, like, one of the most grueling things kayfabe wise, I mean, in real life in professional wrestling, and then you're just going to have him lose the title to the 38-year-old guy who can barely walk? I just don't understand that at all. But I think the shows are still great. They turned it on, put on the last 10-15 minutes were really exciting. They did some cool stuff. But overall, it was a little disappointing compared to what just came before it and the matches these two have had together in the past. Probably the unsung favorite match of the night for me was the tag title match between Shibata and Goto, with Shibata and Goto finally winning the tag titles. That came out of nowhere for me. I expected that to be really mediocre, and it was really fun, compact, and no complaints out of that match for me whatsoever. So good job to all four of those guys.
I find it interesting that, at least as far as from whatever, maybe I didn't hear everything, but did any of you mention Styles versus Naito, which I think everyone going into this thought was going to be one of the top stellar matches of the show? And it wasn't bad. It was not a bad match, and that finish was good. But I don't know. It just didn't seem to get into that second gear. And, you know, TJ and Brian, when we did the preview for it, we were all kind of wondering, okay, AJ Styles, he's probably going to get the win, but, you know, maybe they'll do something different with him. Maybe they will kind of push Naito. But now that Naito has that loss, and I think this is what, he's still losing at Wrestle Kingdom. What does that mean? What does that signal? Because he's one of their young guys. And like TJ just mentioned, Nakamura and Tanahashi, they're still the champions, and probably for good reason. You know, there's probably a lot of things that go into that decision, but they're not the future. I mean, you know, in terms of long term, in the direct future, obviously. But I don't know.
I don't think Naito's the future anymore. I think I just rewatched the match too because I was like, you know, I saw a lot of people did say it was great, and I was just like, I don't remember that at all. And then I watched it again, and it just for the third match from the top, it just wasn't that heated. It came off really flat. Like, there wasn't a ton of excitement. The Styles Clash is really, there's a lot of drama surrounding the Styles Clash for better or worse, but other than that, I didn't see there's anything too exciting about it. And just seeing Kota Ibushi be elevated to that potential main event status on the show really emphasized how far Naito has fallen. He doesn't seem like the future at all.
Jerome, as a relative newcomer to New Japan stuff, what'd you think of Naito and Kota Ibushi and kind of the younger guys? And what'd you think of, you know, we had a lot of title changes in the undercard, but the two main ones, nothing.
It's pretty obvious that they're not going to emphasize Naito and that they really want AJ Styles and Tanahashi to happen at some point. I mean, based on the English commentary, I don't know what the Japanese commentators were discussing, but they were sort of teasing that AJ Styles wanted a rematch with Tanahashi for the IWGP Heavyweight title. So it's a very interesting situation that they're going to put Styles and Tanahashi in there again. They've had a couple of matches before, presumably. They're going to do it again at some point, so I don't know what necessarily the appeal is of that when they've already done it twice before. I mean, New Japan is not WWE where they do main events three or four times in a row.
They're running so many more shows now that they are. Like,
I guess
Nakamura and Bad Luck Fale main evented three shows last year. So,
and if Bad Luck Fale can main event three shows in a row, but it's a little strange. You know, I think Ibushi, obviously, I think when people think about stars of the show, you could argue Nakamura won. You could very easily argue that Ibushi was number two. And, you know, when I was watching this guy in 2008 and 2009, I never pictured him being at a level where he would be considered even for, you know, the New Japan Heavyweight Championship. And it's something that I could see very easily happening within the next couple of years. I think he has just gotten so much better, and more consistent. You know, I think he used to be a guy, spectacular high flyer, very innovative. But I think he's sort of grown up as a performer to where he doesn't, you know, he still does, you know, high flying things, but he doesn't need that to be a great wrestler. And that's the tricky part, I think, for a lot of high flyers, is that sometimes they don't make that transition, and that's how they sort of get passed by. And you could cite a number of examples of that in the history of wrestling, is if you're not going to adapt your style as you get older, as you start to mature, then ultimately you're gonna end up being left behind, and you're never going to reach past a certain point. And Ibushi has done that, and he's, I think, going to be a big part of their future. So, you know, I think from his perspective, you know, he's a guy that I think is going to be elevated. Naito, I mean, it just felt like AJ Styles squashed him. It felt like an extended squash, and there was never a moment in that match where I didn't think AJ Styles was going to win. And, you know, he worked over the leg for the most part. I knew that they were headed for a Styles clash just because it was talked about so much. And, you know, the finish was impressive looking, and, you know, the fact that they were sort of teasing, you know, the discussion around, I think, added drama. But what I think hurt the fact is that, you know, Naito really, it never felt like he had a chance. So I think it sort of ended up being a wash. So those two performers, you know, sort of a mixed bag.
Brian, what are your thoughts on all of this? Naito not winning and presumably maybe not the future anymore. And then the younger guys not really winning those titles in the main events.
Well, I think this is just kind of a test for Ibushi to see if he could actually be at that level. And it was a big test for him, and he passed, I think. So I think you're going to see more Ibushi in the IC title, heavyweight title mix. Naito, he's just going to be another Hiroki Goto, I think. Just upper mid-card, not going to be in the main. Maybe like a few main event pay-per-views, just a challenge, but never win. Unless he changes his look, or maybe he changes his style a little bit, maybe does a heel turn. I mean, if you're going to compare the guy to the Great Muta, maybe just give him some kind of gimmick like that where he can just heel it up and change his style completely and just kind of redefine himself. In terms of AJ Styles, it looks like they're going to do the rematch. Maybe an Invasion Attack, maybe. Kind of fitting since AJ Styles debuted at Invasion Attack 1 year ago, or going to be 8 months, but 1 year when they do Invasion Attack. So that could be an interesting storyline there. You know, Naito, he's never going to be the guy. So just kind of accept it and move on. And unless something changes, he's just going to stay the same. So that's my thoughts on Naito. But AJ challenging, yeah. I doubt he's going to win again. But maybe they have this feeling where maybe they'll give him the belt just as long as it's not around Tokyo Dome season. We can give him the belt essentially as long as it's not at the Tokyo Dome.
Yeah, and so, you know, let's mention some of these other title changes. You know, TJ Hawk, you already mentioned the tag team title match. That was one of your, I guess, kind of underrated matches in that. And same for me. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a lot better than given what I thought it was going to be, especially what I said during our preview show. So good on that. Togi Makabe also defeated Ishii to win the NEVER Openweight Championship. That was, I'm not going to say it was predictable, but it was still just a hard-hitting match. I'm glad it didn't go too long. There was, I would say near the end, though, I almost was feeling like it was going to go kind of long, and then it didn't. So I was happy for that. But Kenny Omega.
Has it been said if Ishii's going for surgery or anything of that sort? Because I know, you know, he obviously has a separated shoulder. It was still taped up at Wrestle Kingdom. Has anything been said about his status? Because that's one of the reasons immediately when he lost, I was like, he's obviously going to be out for a little while, and that's why they took the title off of him. So
he should be. Yeah, I haven't read anything yet, but I've been really busy today. Guys, is there anything in the...
Nothing I've heard, but...
No, I haven't seen anything about it.
So, but...
We'll probably know by Wednesday, so when the Observer comes out.
Most likely. So also, you know, Kenny Omega, he won the
junior... Oh, God, that match sucked.
Ah, there we go. Let's get this started. TJ Hawk, what'd you like about that match?
I liked when it was over.
It.
I mean, legitimately, the last, like, Omega's, like, combination of moves and the match, I thought was good. And but I that was all. I thought that was awful. I mean, it was predictably awful, though. I wasn't, like, upset about it. We talked about it on the preview. I thought it was going to be awful.
And I'm not going to lie, we got a few emails, we got a couple of tweets, some comments, people saying that our preview was kind of negative, and it's like, hey.
You're welcome. You're welcome.
There you go. Brian, what do you think of the junior heavyweight match?
It wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it's had, like, its moments, you know, had some good stuff in it.
As a PWG fan, you liked the chainsaw thing, right?
Well, that, I immediately got that, like, right off the bat, you know. I thought that was awesome, but other than that, like, just, I don't know.
Taguchi sucks. Send him to the sun.
I guess. I mean, it was fine for what it was. I mean, it's not like they screwed up any spots or anything like that. Or, I mean, anything that I could see, but, you know, sick finish, because, I mean, whenever he hits that move, it's kind of brutal.
How long has he been doing that? That reminded me of the Danny Daniels Rubik's Cube. I love the Rubik's Cube.
Yeah, essentially that's what I thought too. Just like a Rubik's Cube, but he does it like with one leg, I guess, because Rubik's Cube I think is two. But yeah, I mean it was fine for what it was. I guess just because they really, I mean, this really had not as much build as you think it would. I mean, because I guess, I mean, he just came out and challenged Taguchi, and then they really had no interaction in terms of tag matches to build it up. So.
Yeah, we were talking about it at the preview show, and I looked it up afterwards. Omega hasn't shown up since he came out to challenge Taguchi.
I was just about to say, my bet on that. I don't know what I don't know. Maybe I just mixed something up there, which is it happens. Come on. So.
But I guess he's just testing out the cleaner character still, and the hair was kind of weird, but I kind of got it. It was kind of like something out of the Munsters. But other than that, you know, it was fine for what it was, and it wasn't too bad.
I won't give up on the Omega like heel character or him as champ, obviously, because I think Taguchi just looks awful these past 4 months. But they need some exciting babyface challengers for Omega as soon as possible.
Well, he's cleaning out the division, so I'm assuming he's going to run through everyone.
It's a shoot that he's literally like, as he defeats these men, they're going away.
They're out of New Japan. They're going to Noah. That's where they're going.
Yeah, send them all to Noah. I really hope like Taichi and Desperado then challenge a new beginning and they get cleaned out too.
Man, what's with the Taichi heat? Come on, jeez. Speaking of the Noah guys, Jerome, how did you think their debut went? Did you like it? And what do you see going forward?
I want to see more of East and Nichols as a team. That's the one thing I walked away from in this match. And the one thing I will say is, the 6-man tag team and the 8-man tag team match were not very good. But at least there was a purpose served in sort of the short amount of time they were given. I mean, Hanma sort of got the golf clap reward for a tremendous G1 victory by getting a victory in the dome, and the fans were very happy about that. So, you know, I was happy with that result, mainly because it seems like this is a guy that a lot of fans really like. And it was good that Hanma got a victory in the dome. I think, you know, he sort of earned that, deserves it. And the 8-man tag, again, you know, I think they were sort of pushing this relationship with Pro Wrestling Noah. And that, again, I think is a good thing. That's a positive if it means that they can send some of their wrestlers down to Noah. And it looks like that's exactly what they're going to be doing. They teased a lot of interaction between Haste and Nichols against Davey Boy Smith Jr. and Lance Archer. So presumably that's one of the matches that I guess is going to happen in Noah more so than New Japan. So we'll see what happens there. It was just weird seeing Marufuji like in this random 8-man tag. I mean, obviously, you know, Pro Wrestling Noah has fallen pretty significantly since you know, Noah was prominently featured in Ring of Honor, but it was a little weird seeing where Marufuji is relative to his former tag team partner Kenta now being a huge part of NXT. And as far as the Kenny Omega thing, I think I'm almost wondering if New Japan, it seems like they want Kenny Omega to be the next Prince Devitt, but Kenny Omega really isn't like Prince Devitt.
He's very
comedic. He's really like over the top with how comedic he's being so far. And Omega gets over everywhere in Japan because he doesn't try to be a stereotypical, you know, Japanese wrestler. Like, you know, for instance, like Davey never really got over in Japan because no one bought him like as interesting. He felt like someone trying to be a Japanese wrestler. Omega gets over everywhere because he doesn't do that. So I think he will get over, but I don't know if it's going to lead to good matches.
I don't know if it's as a heel though. Like, it seems like he's much better comedically. If he's going to play the comedy thing, he'd be better off as a babyface.
And his style, I mean, in the ring, he's also just more entertaining as a face overall. I mean, I don't.
I mean, I was very shocked at how poor this match was, even despite, you know, what you guys said in the preview. I mean, this match just wasn't. I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't even like I wouldn't even classify it as good. I mean, Omega, I would much rather watch every Bola match over again as opposed to this. I mean, this was, I mean, there was some shenanigans with the Bullet Club. You know, there was some weird things going on, and we'll see what happens. I would say that the IWGP Junior match was the biggest disappointment of the whole show.
Not if you watched the junior, that same exact match a year ago, you would know that it was not going to get over and that they would go, and that they actually went longer this time, which surprised me, but it wasn't laid out well. They spent the first 8 minutes doing nothing. And then they tried to save it with a bunch of moves. And it was like this weird thing where like Red Dragon disappeared until like the very end of the match. I really couldn't get into that one at all. I thought that was really poorly executed and poorly conceived overall.
I don't know. The junior tag team match, I thought, was pretty much what it was supposed to be. I mean, I get what you're saying, but I mean, what else would you have been looking for in that match?
I think it should have just been an insane spot fest from the beginning. I mean, I think the singles match was the biggest disappointment, but I definitely didn't walk away from the junior tag match, you know, being wowed. I mean, especially when you look at the quality of these four teams. I mean, these are some really outstanding teams. I mean, Red Dragon and the Young Bucks arguably had three of the best tag team matches all years, and this just felt like a total throwaway. The Forever Hooligans, I mean, Alex Kozlov did not look in shape at all. I don't particularly think they add a lot to the matches that they're involved with anyway. The Time Splitters are obviously very good, but it just felt like it was a feeling-out process, and then it was just moves, and I would have rather have just seen Insanity from the start and not even go with the pretext of having a feeling out process.
Well, that makes sense. Especially since you're supposed to know they all know each other, right? Like, you're supposed to know that they've all wrestled each other.
But the thing is that they do know each other, but there's still a lot of timing issues as well. The referee was clearly going to count three after the Meltzer driver, and he hesitated. Like, that was definitely noticeable.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Brian, what did you think of that opening match, the junior tag team title match?
Well, I actually only saw like this last 5 minutes of the match just because I was trying to find
to get
the show on.
Yeah.
But as soon as I put it on, like it just seemed like JR was completely lost. And then as soon as the super kick happened, the only thing you hear is super kick, and then him being lost again. Still,
as Jerome said, his commentary during the first two matches, kind of rough. But then by the end, it was tremendous.
Fine,
it was
yeah.
great. Jim Ross really made it up in the show, and I'm hoping he does more. Obviously, we don't know. But Brian, at least you didn't miss the Great Kabuki. That's all you need to say, right?
Yeah. I saw that. That was just like the people in my house were just like, "Who's this old guy?" And then who are these other two old guys? Because like as soon as they heard the Daniel Bryan theme, I'm like, is that Daniel Bryan coming out? And there's like, no, it's the guy who Daniel Bryan ripped his theme song from. And then just like, oh, okay. Some old Japanese guy. Got it. Okay. Got it.
Hey, you never speak badly of Hiro Sato. Never. How dare you? But yeah, that opening pre-match rumble,
it was completely nothing.
Yeah, it really was. And then, I mean, Yuji Nagata won. Big shock, right? Everyone here is shocked at that.
I feel like that was a waste of Nagata, but whatever.
Such a waste.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I'm not saying what match he could have been inserted into, but yeah, it was kind of a waste.
He could have faced AJ. And
yeah, that's what I was thinking. He probably would have been better off facing AJ Styles.
There you go. So let's see. Some other things that we can touch upon. Obviously, Jerome, you mentioned this. Hanma getting the win in the Dome. Kind of a medium pop for that. I mean, good for him. Not what any of us were expecting. I think we all kind of thought Jeff Jarrett would get the kind of thank you pat on the back win, but he didn't. So, once again, the Bullet Club, guys, in 2015.
They're not going anywhere, are they?
Yeah.
I thought they'd be done last year at this point, and they are not going anywhere. I think they must sell too – I'm sure all the wrestlers want to be like, we're selling too many T-shirts, never break us up.
for now.
And Takahashi, he's still the whipping boy. He's just getting beat left and right, and that's fine. I mean, and Honma beat him, so you know it kind of still ties into what happened at G1, but still, it's like, it's whatever. But yeah, I mean, so let's get into some of the other points as we're loading down.
How about Shelton Benjamin being flown out for that?
Yeah.
I think Amber O'Neil served more of a purpose than Shelton Benjamin did.
I mean, like, at least, like, Killer Elite Squad are probably getting involved in this Noah thing. Like, what? Why is Shelton there? Go away.
Yeah.
Never know, he could be going to Noah and challenging for the JC title.
I hope he does. I hope he does.
Just because he has something to do.
That's what Noah is for, TJ. That's what you're saying. You're like, Noah, that's where you
just send all the shitty gaijin to Noah, please.
Basically, TJ Hawk doesn't want to have to watch them, so put them in a company he doesn't watch, people. That's what he's saying.
Forever Hooligan, Shelton Benjamin, Killer Elite Squad, have them all invade Noah. Send Luke Gallows with them.
Makes sense. Well, the former WWE guys go there anyway. I mean, they had Scotty Swati and Funaki teaming with Super Crazy. So. Yeah,
and like, let Hiro and Zack Sabre Jr. invade New Japan. Like, that's a fair trade, I think.
I can see that. I mean, hey, while you're at it, you know, just Jeff Jarrett, just have the, you know, them all go there and have fun with that.
And since Scott D'Amore, he can go too. He can go to Noah too. He can lead the army.
He is the number two guy, right? Yeah. In the Bullet Club, he's number two.
The Bullet Club E-Squad.
Oh, man. I would totally watch the segment on YouTube of Scott D'Amore leading all the shitty New Japan gaijin into an invasion of Noah. That is good comedy.
And Bad Luck Fale, yes. Yes, but I mean, come on, guys. He's got a main event. Come on. But yeah. So I mean, obviously, there's some good things on the show. There's some bad things, and I mean, I guess we really don't have to mention that Suzuki Sakuraba. That did happen. I mean, granted, Suzuki's outfit, guys.
Oh, he was so beautiful.
That's magic. That's magic. I don't care what anyone says.
Although on some close-ups, it did kind of make him look older just because of the white hair. But
actually, I thought he looked slimmer.
Yeah.
It was really weird. I thought he looked slimmer and white.
He looked better than Sakuraba. I mean, I have all the respect in the world for that guy, but man, just stop, please.
I thought that was his best match since the Nakamura match, but I didn't think it was anywhere close to the Nakamura match.
Oh, sure. I just meant in terms of, like, you know, how he was coming out and his look. I mean, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know what's going on behind the scenes and stuff like that, but it's like, I think we all know that they do the one-year contracts. I'm like, come on, can this experiment be over with Sakuraba? Just, you know, just make him one of those guys you just bring in. I don't know. Never. Send him to Noah. There you go.
Well, they may have been doing that. I mean, they did have the guys hug, and they played, I guess, the old UWF iMusic. So maybe that's where they were going with this. I mean, this wasn't.
I enjoyed that change of pace mid-card match. I thought it was fine.
This wasn't nearly as bad. I thought it was going to be a disaster.
Right, when you're going on those I guess expectations, yeah, it was. And I'm not saying the match was bad. I'm just saying that in terms of soccer, he's kind of like, you can tell he's getting old, and he just, you know, I don't need to see him next year. That's all I'm saying. Suzuki though, hey, if he has that outfit or a gold outfit, come on back. It's perfectly fine.
They are actually added to this match, I think, because like, he really built up their history, you know, being the students of Carl Gotch and Billy Robinson. That was kind of cool, you know.
Right.
He actually added something to it, I thought, for the American audiences, and actually made it seem like a special match, you know. So
I give JR did. I think we could just kind of transition into that. JR did obviously a lot of good prep work. There were kind of a couple weird lines here and there from him, like particularly during the Rumble match, and he said he thought someone was going to be in it and win it when it's like, yeah, they're in the match, but. You know, especially, okay, like, for example, when it was the tag team match, the IWGP tag title match, Goto and Shibata, I think he really did really, like, you know, pretty well telling the story of Shibata and Goto, how they were friends, and how this was a big moment for them, and, there were some times, though, he'd get the guys mixed up, but, and that's fine, you know, I'm not gonna criticize him for that, you know, maybe it's the first time he's calling it, so whatever. But yeah, Jerome, what did you think of JR's overall a calling of the show, and if you want to give thoughts on Stryker, that's fine too.
I mean, they weren't bad. I don't think it's a very tough position to be in when your first show is like the biggest show of the year, and you're trying to process all of this. You've got all these names to learn, and You know, obviously, when you don't live in the country, you know, it's pronunciations. It's I can't even imagine how tough it's got to be to sort of acclimate yourself. And not only that, but you've also got the travel. You've got just all of these things to process. So it's got to be very difficult. And I think these two did about as good of a job as you could expect from them in the overall. You know, I think there are certainly some aspects of Stryker that annoy me, but you know, it's also clear that he does have an appreciation for the project, and that, I think that's good. I think he did a better job conveying the stories than JR did at times. And in the end, you know, these are probably the right two people to pick, especially with if they couldn't have Mike Tenay, then I guess that these would be the two best people. It's really tough to find people who watch New Japan and also broadcast pro wrestling in this country. So you're sort of limited by that. And I think they did about as good of a job as possible. But, you know, I even though I don't understand what they're saying, I do appreciate the enthusiasm of the Japanese commentators. And I really do wish that I understood Japanese, because I think it would enhance my enjoyment of the product.
I was really hoping Stryker would have explained the Iizuka commentary guy. I forget his name, but that situation better. But anyway, moving past that, Brian, what did you think of JR and Matt Stryker?
Well, Matt Stryker kind of killed it at some time. Like, he kind of killed the moment sometimes, just like, I'm marking out. I'm just like, God. Like, there'd be times me and Dez and Rudy are just like, ah, God, you know, like,
yeah, it was funny. A lot of the comments that we got on Stryker, some people, and they were saying this as it's a positive, and that's fine, that's their opinion. They were saying, man, I like Stryker because he calls it the way I would call it as a fan. And it's like, yeah, that's...
But you're not supposed to call it
his job.
That's the point. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, so... And then it was kind of weird, just like him starting to name drop all these promotions, and he name dropped Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and Ring of Honor, and I was just like, are you, like, supposed to be doing this right now? Are you going to get in trouble for this? Like, it was just such a surreal kind of feeling sitting there listening to JR call a New Japan show while at the same time Matt Stryker's there name-dropping, like, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla and Ring of Honor, and just, like, it was like the Twilight Zone last night, you know? Probably it was because, you know, it was also 2 in the morning, and you kind of mixed the, you know, I think because Dez brought some bourbon, too, so there was also some of that going on last night. And, yeah, just, I don't know. The commentary was great. I'd give it a B+, and then like Jim Ross, I'd give like a B+, and then Matt Stryker, like, I don't know, C+, B-.
Before we get TJ Hawk's thoughts, I just got to point this out. And Matt, you know, thanks for reminding me in the chat that so you had Jim Ross saying he didn't know what a swerve meant, an obvious knock on Russo, and then that when he said that the Intercontinental title, some of the guys in New Japan, they actually want to have a title and fight for a title that means something. Imagine that. And, I mean, that was clearly a knock against WWE's Intercontinental and whatever other titles they have going
on
there.
All the cheap shots were just kind of unnecessary, I felt. And it's just like, okay, come on. And then it was kind of funny with Jim Ross kind of, I got to get in my brother's. Because it's an ode to your partner Vampiro on Lucha Underground. It's like, wow, they just name dropped Lucha Underground. Like, oh my God. It's like all the wrestling.
Hey, maybe that's part of it. You bring in Matt Stryker, maybe that was part of the deal, right? I don't know.
They name dropped Vampiro and Lucha Underground at least 2 times, brother.
They did name drop Ring of Honor also, though, so there's a positive.
It was just weird. It was so weird.
It was weird. TJ Hawk.
Well, Dragon, I mean, they do have a relationship with Ring of Honor, so I don't think that's completely out of bounds.
Yeah, no, that's obvious. So, TJ Hawk, what'd you think of the commentary? Be positive, man.
I thought the Japanese commentators were fantastic, as they always are. That's all I got to say about that.
There you go. So guys, I guess in these last couple minutes, I don't... There's a part of me that doesn't want to bring this up, but we kind of should... Jerome, you tweeted about it. We're not going to name names. At least I don't want to. But
I will.
Wrestlers giving out streams on Twitter.
To be fair, it's not wrestlers. It's one wrestler. And
yeah,
he's
okay. There's Jerome.
Is he still a wrestler? Did AJ break his neck?
What happened? Yeah.
I mean, I don't. It's it. That has nothing to do with this. I mean, he's an idiot for sending a link out with the show. I mean, go to New Japan World and spend the $8 to watch this show. I don't think the English commentary is going to exactly enhance. If you go ahead and read a review, or if you read what Voices of Wrestling or the AV Club or anyone else who's written about this show on the wrestling websites, if you go do that, you'll be well prepared. Just go to New Japan World, give your $8 for the month, then you'll not only get Wrestle Kingdom, but you'll also get some shows that are happening the rest of this month. And maybe they're not going to be anywhere close to this show, but you'll probably find some diamonds in the rough. And I think New Japan does present a fairly good product, and that's really about it. I mean, there's no reason you can't support this venture at this point. I mean, for $8 a month, like I said, for New Japan Worlds, you really can't beat it.
Jerome, I don't think David Young is coming to New Japan. I just don't think that's happening.
That's more than okay with me.
There you go. So anyway, so as we're getting out of here, there are other, of course, the big question is, when is the next pay-per-view going to happen? I think a lot of the speculation is the G1, and honestly, I will keep New Japan World just for that, just for this show, for those set of shows. I could not watch New Japan World every other month and just pay for it, and I think it would still be worth it. TJ, you've done a lot of coverage. I think you did especially a lot of coverage to last year's G1. What do you think about G1 being on, not all the shows, obviously, but maybe the finals on traditional pay-per-view here in the United States?
I thought the final kind of sucked last year. Everyone was really tired. They were in a dome. Like, no one, like, only a couple of the matches got over, personally. I mean, I thought the main event was great. I like Red Dragon had a strong debut, but it would be a good one to do it because everyone's going to be really hyped up for it because it'll be after like 2.5 weeks of great wrestling. But I don't know if that's going to be maybe it'll force them to put on a better show this time. So in that case, all for it.
Brian, you're going to be watching the G1.
For sure. Probably not live on all the nights because I work, but it's definitely going to be worth it for the G1. I mean, and by then it might not even be $8.40 or $8.40 because the last bill on my statement, it actually said like $8.32. So it actually dropped 8 cents because of the currency rate. It's always changing. So it's never always going to be $8.40. It could be $8.20. It could be $8.30, depending how bad the American dollar is, which is kind of saying something. But yeah, it's going to be sweet. But I think the next live show, I don't think it should be the G1. I think it should be, I don't know, either maybe the Osaka show, which is going to be in that other building they do, which is kind of like, I think, 12,000, I think? Osaka, I forget what it's called, but if that crowd is going to be super hot, I'd rather have a super hot, intimate crowd than a big dome where you can't really, you know, as cool as this dome was, you know, it's the dome show and all, but sometimes those Osaka crowds are just infectious, you know, kind of reminds you of like an indie show or a hot indie show. And I think that might be a better choice to put on pay-per-view just because I think the fans going nuts in Osaka is going to come off a lot better on pay-per-view.
Like 100% agreed.
And Jerome, I mean, I'm super excited. You're keeping New Japan World, I assume, and you're going to be really witnessing, you know, a G1, you know, at the end of the year. I think it's going to be great. I mean, I'm pretty sure you've seen some of last year's, but not like all of it, right?
I saw some of last year's.
Right.
I think, you know, I saw some matches and this is not something where I'm going to commit myself to watch every match of every show, but I think it's definitely worth checking out like the main events of all the shows. And, you know, I'm probably going to at least watch the major pay-per-views for sure. And I think that's a really positive step. I think the fact that we all have access to this now, I think is really, really positive for New Japan. And there's been a lot of really positivity about this show and sort of what it represents as sort of an alternative to WWE, because unlike the independents, you know, this was not only did you have the great wrestling, which I think a lot of indie shows are capable of doing, but there was also high quality production. There were 40,000 to 50,000 fans in the Tokyo Dome. So you can't complain, oh, that this is just another indie show. This was, you know, a very well put together show that, you know, could easily look like a WWE show just for the fact of the production. So this served as a great alternative, and hopefully people take advantage of this whether it be through the regular pay-per-view, through the Flips app, or through New Japan Worlds, and we'll see how this all develops. We'll see. I'm very curious to see what the New Japan World numbers are going to be, because I think there are a lot of people who were going to buy this on traditional pay-per-view, but once some of the announcements came out and once some of the complications from the cable company came out, I wonder if there was some late movement either towards New Japan World or just torrenting the show. And obviously the torrenting would be very unfortunate, but you know, it's just a matter of giving people access in a way that makes sense. And I think that's obviously the only thing that can hurt them is people torrenting the show.
And
It was being reported that it was being torrented at like a crazy rate, like Money in the Bank 2011 rate. So people are interested. They're just not willing to spend $8.50 to watch it.
Well, hopefully I think they also change their mind.
Presumably would be for the English commentary, and they didn't want to spend $35.
Right. Well, hopefully they change their mind on that, because it's definitely a worthwhile investment. The last bit of news that I'm going to talk about here is, of course, the announcement that Ring of Honor and New Japan are going to co-host the show in May. And if you go to the Ring of Honor website right now, the only two shows they have there are in Toronto. And that's not a confirmation that there aren't other shows, you know, possibly in New York or in other areas where they may do some more co-promoted
stuff. Do they even have a venue in New York right now?
I looked on the Terminal 5 website for anything in May announced. There's nothing there, but there is absolutely nothing. So maybe Terminal 5 doesn't even update their website to that. Like, I have no idea. But as of right now, it doesn't. Terminal 5 would be the venue, right, in New York. So that's pretty much all we can go up. But we're not saying that nothing will happen. So hopefully. So guys, that is pretty much it. Thank you, everyone, for joining us live. Send us your thoughts. Let us know what you thought of Wrestle Kingdom 9. Mailbag at pwponderings.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. And, you know, obviously, I think this is a major show of the year. It's going to be talked about for quite a while. This is, of course, New Japan on Access TV coming. I believe we will be covering that on PWP, right, Trum? I think there's someone covering that for us. Hopefully there will be, and should be a lot of fun.
I'll be very interested to see how the commentary is for that, and hopefully we can transition from maybe even JR and Matt Stryker if there is going to be more North American shows or more North American New Japan pay-per-views. That hopefully, I think it's Mauro Ranallo and Josh Barnett, correct?
Yes, and trust me when I say those guys know what they're doing on commentary. They're pretty good.
That's very intriguing to me as a potential commentary duo in the future, because you know obviously JR is JR, but I'm not sure if he's gonna be able to do this on a consistent basis, and ditto for Matt Stryker. I would want to hear two guys who really have a good understanding of the product, and you know I think that's the one thing that can be improved upon is to just find two people who know the product and are capable broadcasters. Obviously that's very difficult.
Yes, it is. So for Brian, TJ Hawk, Jerome, thank you everyone for joining us. We're going to be posting this on pwponderings.com. So have a good night. Talk to you again real soon.